Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name is Rohan Karamandi, and as usual, with me I have Phil. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan. Good morning.
Morning. And today we are joined by Joshua. How's it going?
Hey, good morning.
This episode is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports their Home Assistant and ESP Home projects. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML.
So let's jump into it. Joshua, what brings you in today?
I wasn't ready for that.
Tell us your problems, Joshua. We'll help you.
That's right.
Safe space. Talk about it.
I just want to share my Home Assistant experience and just share what I've done inside Home Assistant and what I do for home automation.
And whereabouts in the world are you from?
I live in North Carolina in the United States.
Nice.
All right. So I guess, you know, when did you start down the journey of home automation in general? Like, what, have you always used Home Assistant first, or have you come from another platform and then come onto Home Assistant?
So I originally started with the Vera system. Mm-hmm. And I had all Z-Wave stuff, but I found that being connected to the cloud tends to be a problem.
Yes.
So,
right.
So my boss at the time recommended that I look into Home Assistant. And once I started playing with it, I never looked back.
That's cool.
That's interesting. So what sort of like Vera were you using? I thought they were, you know, because it's Z-Wave, like it should be all local anyway, but does the Vera you're using require a cloud connection to operate, or?
At the time, I was going through their cloud service.
Yep. Okay. Right.
Got it.
So, yeah, internet goes out, then obviously no home automation for you, or, you know, if it's, you know, you're pressing a button somewhere and it takes, you know, 10 minutes for it to go up to some server randomly and back to you, mm-hmm. adds that bit of frustration, right?
Absolutely.
I forget. Did the Vera ever come out with local stuff, or was it all cloud always? Like from a control perspective,
I think they did, but yeah, I'm not sure. To be honest,
I've got a Vera Lite, and it's like you can connect. Like you can similar to how Nabucasa has like the remote access. There's a Vera cloud component where you can remotely access it, but all the, you know, controlling of devices, the automations are run locally on that device, but. Yeah, I just basically use mine as a Z-Wave dongle, basically, and then push it over to Home Assistant.
That's awesome. So, I mean, what made you make the move? So you said it was because, you know, that was all cloud. Did you have an experience that kind of kicked you to get rid of the cloud or kick the cloud, whatever you want to call it?
No, I just kind of thought about it for a little bit, and I was like, you know, if I do lose internet, like it's going to be annoying then none of my automations run. And then I think I had some issue where for some reason it just wiped out all my devices. And I was like, okay, time to try something new.
And they're not easy to like repair, right? Like Zebra, right. You got to go around, make sure that they click the buttons at the right time. Yeah. That's frustrating.
Very frustrating.
Yeah. Wow. So then you ended up moving all to, and did you do what Phil did where you used the Vera as a hub initially, or did you just buy your own like little stick and do it that way?
Yeah, at first I just used my connection between Home Assistant and Vera, but I eventually graduated to using a Z-Wave stick, and that has been working out perfectly for me.
Nice.
So when like did you join Home Assistant? Were you like early enough to be in where you had to use groups to do any UI before Lovelace, or have you like are you a recent convert?
I believe I started using it around the 0.3 something.
Oh, wow. Yep. Okay. So you've been here a while.
Yeah.
So pretty early. Yeah.
You've got some badges. Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. Back when all you could do was use configuration files.
Yes. Yep. No UI at all. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, cool. And what sort of like hardware are you running Home Assistant on?
Right now I'm running on like just a little mini PC. I'm running it in a Docker instance.
Mm.
I have plenty of Docker images that are or Docker containers that I run, so it just makes sense for me.
Yeah.
I originally ran it on a Raspberry Pi 3, but I found it was kind of slow and I had a SD card issue.
Mm-hmm. Yep, as everyone does back then. Yeah.
I tend to jump whenever I have a catastrophic failure, so.
It's and if you haven't done any backups, I guess it's a good opportunity to start from the ground up and go, all right, what would I do better this time, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, that's awesome. So, I mean, it sounds like you put it on Docker or whatever. Are you running any other containers like Node-RED or any of these other, any, you know, supplementary containers, if you want to call it?
I run Node-RED. That's one of my favorites. And I also run a Tasmota backup image.
Okay.
So it goes and automatically backs up my Tasmota devices.
Nice.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And is that all on the one Docker host, or have you got multiple hosts?
It's all on the one. Yeah, I have all my Docker images on one device.
Yep.
And I back up the configuration every night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Are you doing anything from an availability perspective outside of that? Like, let's say a Docker container dies, anything spins up automatically and like on a second host or anything like that, or just single host and single?
Just single host, yeah. If the container becomes unhealthy or dies off or something, it will spin it back up.
Right. No, that's a pretty cool setup. I think that's fairly similar to mine too. That's which I don't know. I found works well, but
oh yeah, it's been pretty bulletproof.
Yeah,
it's hard to do high availability when you've got, you know, like USB sticks that need to be plugged into a certain thing, right? Like,
yeah.
All right. So so you've got your basic Home Assistant set up, you know, pretty standard. I think you know, running a Docker, which is basically all of us here. What are some of the cool stuff you've done around the house with it, though?
Oh, man. So one that the girlfriend likes is I always forgot to text her whenever. So we live about an hour and 15 minutes apart. Mm-hmm. And I would always forget to send her a text message that I got home safely or vice versa. She'd forget.
Yep.
So I set her up an account on mine. And I just check whenever her phone is in my zone, mm-hmm. flip a switch. And then when she gets home, if that switch is flipped on, it'll automatically send me a message saying she got home safely and vice versa for me.
Yep.
So
yeah, that's cool. Like, that gives you like a bit of peace of mind, right? Like,
yeah.
Nice.
Especially when you gotta drive, you know, an hour and a half whenever it's dark out and.
Yep.
Anything can happen.
Yeah, that's a bit spooky on the roads. Yeah, no, and that's like a nice little safety thing, right? Like, you know, if, you know, it's been an hour and a half and they're usually home within an hour and 15, right? Like, okay, now I need to start worrying. Or, you know, he's just gone to pick up milk or something, right?
Right.
Yeah. That's cool. So, and I'm guessing there would have been, you know, some form of someone forgetting quite often. I'm guessing...
it was me.
Yeah, I didn't want to... yeah. I can see that. But no, you know what? If it works, then it works. And I think that's a
great use case. Great. Right?
Yeah. So you've just set her up as a user in Home Assistant, like as under your instance that you then expose via the cloud. Okay, cool.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. What other kind of automations and stuff do you have there that you're kind of proud of?
So I followed Rob from the Hookups mm-hmm. Blinds project, except I added my own little twist. I didn't like all the wires and whatnot, so I designed my own PCB.
Nice.
And just kind of cleaned it up a little bit. And I've got that running on about 8 windows right now. And every morning at sunrise, it kicks off a routine in Node-RED for me. And depending on if I'm working from home that day or going into the office, it will either open or leave them closed. And then about an hour before sunset, it'll go ahead and close all the blinds.
Yep, that's so awesome. That's
been one of my favorites. And then another one I had was letting my Xbox control my entire home surround sound stuff. So depending on if I'm in a game, if I'm in a game, it'll mute the TV or the surround sound system. So only my headphones work. And if I'm watching any kind of media type app or whatnot, it will switch the surround sound back on.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool. Because I guess, you know, if you're watching... Yep. Yeah, like games or anything, and you're just using your headphones. You don't need, you know, speakers on, wasting an hour. Yeah, that's cool.
That also controls the lights behind the TV as well.
Cool. Nice. So depending on if you're watching a movie or playing a game, like the lights will do something different.
Right. If you're watching a movie, you just get like a plain color background that kind of is just there. Mm-hmm. And then if you're gaming, you get the bias lighting in the background.
Ooh, that's nice.
So
it's really cool. Does the bias lighting actually change with the game, like as you move around?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
Is that like
from Philips
Hue, or have you got like, did you custom make it like with WLED or something? Or?
Yeah, using WLED and Raspberry Pi, and mm-hmm. then just using a HDMI splitter and whatnot. Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm guessing the...
I'm sorry, it's Hyperion, not WLED.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So I'm guessing the video output goes from the Xbox into the Raspberry Pi and then back out to the TV. That's how it knows what's on the screen. And then...
Yep.
Yep. And then the Raspberry Pi controls the LEDs from there.
Yeah. That's what the splitter is for, right? To split the signal between the TV and the Raspberry Pi. So.
Of course. Yep.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, that's awesome.
Why can't you do that? Are you using apps inside Xbox to watch movies as well? Like, couldn't you have the BIOS lighting for movies or TV shows or anything coming out of the Xbox in general?
I found for, like, some TV shows and stuff, like, it would switch scenes too much, and the LEDs behind the TV were lagging behind slightly.
Right.
You don't notice it much in game, but in a TV show, you can see the color change happen from time to time.
Interesting. I would have thought that games would have been more
absolutely
quick to change like scenery as you're running through one scene to the other or something like that.
And maybe I just get tunnel vision. Maybe I just don't see the...
Maybe. Entirely possible, right? But that's cool.
Yeah. And so obviously you got like just addressable LEDs off Amazon or something and stuck them around the TV.
Correct.
Yeah, that's nice. All right,
I'm that's wicked. That's something I've seen, and I've always been like, man, that's cool. But I've never thought of actually doing it myself. But
I tried to buy a project on Indiegogo once, and they ran away with the money. They like they claimed they got sued by Philips.
Yeah,
and they were like, yeah, nah, we can't use this name anymore. So and then they just shut up shop and they're gone. Right. So.
Yeah, it was called, I think it was called a Zambilight or something like that.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
To go along with the Philips Ambilight.
Yep.
TV, so.
Yeah. All right, and so the blind controllers that you did from the hookup, what protocol are they using for communication? Do they connect to Wi-Fi?
Yeah, they connect to Wi-Fi, and I'm using MQTT commands.
Nice.
Nice.
And how are you powering? Are you've got them all hardwired in, or are they battery-operated?
I have them all powered in I'm actually just using the wires inside of a Ethernet cable.
Yeah,
okay.
And just using that to supply power.
Yep. Yeah, because it's just
like
5 volts
over Ethernet, right?
Yeah, it's just using 5 volts, so I can use just two of the wires or whatnot to go to two different windows.
Right. Yeah, that's cool.
That is neat. It's I've wanted to do something like that in here too, especially the like my home office upstairs, which is the room I'm talking in right now. It's one of those things where it's if we sleep in, then we always forget to open the blinds, and then if it's we open it, we leave, and then we come home at night and the blinds are still open, the lights are on, right? So I've always wanted one of those things. I actually even looked up buying the pre-made ones, which are like $100 each, but there's three blinds. And I was like, that's $300. I don't want to spend that much. Or like $120 or something like that.
You should look on AliExpress. Just look for AM43. They're like a blind control. They're ugly, but they have physical buttons on them. And I think they're like $40 or something a piece.
AM43, you said?
Yep. That's like, there's so many brands, like there's different brands of them. But AM43 is like the white label underneath it, like, you know, 2 years. And then you can get, there's an ESP Home library that you can download, and that integrates into Home Assistant through the API or through MQTT. And then it just comes in as a cover.
Oh, I see those. So the problem is mine's not those type of blinds. Mine is the kind of Venetian blind, like the louvre style. So what happens is I need to twist the stick to actually make it open, right?
And that's how mine works.
Yeah.
There's Soma. Soma Tilt exists as well, I think.
Yeah. So I've seen those. Yeah,
but that'd be a couple $100 easily.
Exactly. There's another one. I think it's by the same people that make. I want to say it's by the same people that make the SwitchBot, but I might be wrong.
They came out with the curtains, the SwitchBot curtain recently.
So that's a curtain one. I mean, maybe I'm confusing them, but there is a vendor, and I can't think of their name right now, but there is a vendor. But basically, you take their little motor and you stick it in. Where all the mechanisms are.
The tilt rod.
Yeah, the tilt rod is. And essentially, you stick the motor in there with a coupling, and it'll essentially virtually twist the stick for you, right? But it sounds like, Joshua, that's kind of what you're doing as well. And I have seen the hookups video, too, and I looked at making it, and I was like, oh, I need something battery just because I don't have power against that wall, and I really don't want to rip up my walls to do this.
So how are you hiding the wires, Joshua? Like,
that's what I was going to ask.
So most of my windows have some kind of jack near them, like underneath them somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of run the wire up behind the blinds in the window frame.
Yeah.
And then, well, once I go through the housing of the blinds, I just kind of jump across the window to the other window. And then I use channel hiders or whatnot.
Yep. Okay.
Okay.
And they look pretty good. They don't look strips. Yeah. The little plastic strips. Yeah. And they don't look bad. Like I was afraid it would kind of look tacky, but it actually looks pretty good.
Ah, that's good. Yeah. Those channel hiders, like as a renter, I've got so many around the house, just stuck up with 3M hooks.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So, and you're still using Zwave, obviously, through your Zwave dongle. Have you got any other like home automation protocols around the house? Are you using, you know, Zigbee or anything like that?
So I've been looking into Zigbee, just because I feel like everything I see now is starting to use that instead of Z-Wave.
Yeah.
And I understand it's cheaper licensing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've actually had the Combi stick in my, Amazon, wish list for at least like 3 or 4 months now.
Yeah.
Just can't quite pull the trigger.
Have they ever sent you an email to say the price is, you know, 10% off this day or something like that?
Yeah, but then again, I don't have any Zigbee devices right now, but I want to get something that is really good at motion sensing. Like, that's the next step I want to take is just putting motion sensors up in most rooms and stuff.
Yeah,
it's interesting, right? Like, I have, like, Zwave motion sensors, so I've got the very old AOTech 4-in-1 motion sensor, and then their new Smart Sensor 6, which is the tiny little one. And I find that even if they're powered in, there's always a delay in, you know, the motion being detected, and then I see the light go off, and then, you know, obviously going out through the Vero, then to home assistant, and then the light eventually being turned on. And, you know, when you're when you walk into a room, you expect, you know, the lights to be on in an instant, right? So, yeah, I don't know if, like, maybe it's just the Zwave protocol being slow, you know, because they have to spin up and dial in. Maybe a Zigbee motion sensor would be better. Yeah, I'd be very interested to see what people recommend for motion sensors.
Yeah, I've because I used Zigbee motion sensors in my house. I used the SmartThings ones that I just literally just waited for them to go on sale at, I guess, locally at Best Buy here. And when they did, I grabbed a few and called it a day there. But they seem to be actually pretty quick. I don't tie my lighting automations to them because I you typically use time of day for that. But even just looking, even while I set them up and stuff, when I looked in Home Assistant, like, you know, waved my hand when there was no motion, and it's fairly instant. I mean, obviously there's always some level of latency, but it wasn't that noticeable. I just barely noticed some latency, so fairly quick. I never thought to time it or anything, but I've had pretty good luck with that.
Xiaomi's always got, you know, cheap motion sensors too, right? Because they're all Zigbee. So maybe I'll just buy a cheap Xiaomi motion sensor when they're on sale next and test it out.
And then you can let me know how it works out.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'll be a beta tester for you.
That's right. But yeah, so yeah, that's an option too, to check out. But yeah, again, in all honesty, it's I think it's one of those things where, like you said, Joshua, there's so many things that are Zigbee, and I just found for myself, like, I like Z-Wave as a protocol better, but just cost.
Yeah,
yeah. Right?
It's. I mean, as an iPhone user, I can say it too. It's basically the iPhone tax, right? Where you're paying for that tight integration, because they control how devices do whatever, rather than Zigbee, it's kind of a free for all.
Right. I've got so many Z-Wave devices that it would almost be shooting myself in the foot to make a full switch.
Yeah.
Although you could sell them on eBay.
Yeah, that's true.
True.
So sell the stuff on eBay, you know, and then you might be able to buy half your stuff in Zigbee, or probably, you know, probably replace it all in Zigbee and have some money left over.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
That's interesting. So what are you using for presence detection? So you've also got the app for when, you know, you're in different zones. Is that the only form of presence detection you're using, just GPS on the phone with the Home Assistant app? Or do you augment it with, you know, like Bluetooth trackers or Wi-Fi presence or anything like that?
I used to use Wi-Fi presence, but the app has just been so good. I just rely on the app.
Yep, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, nothing to add. The apps are great.
It's just so good.
I honestly, that the app changed my world. Like it is, because I used to use a bunch of other stuff, right? And it was terrible. But yeah, the app is great.
And I like that I can get like all the different sensors and stuff on my phone to send back, like battery level for one thing. Like my phone charger in my bedroom, whenever I run my goodnight routine, it turns that wall outlet on. And as soon as my phone hits 100%, it turns that outlet off. So I'm not overcharging my phone.
Yeah, that's cool.
Interesting.
And do you have it so it turns it on just before you wake up so that you're back to 100%?
No, not typically. I probably should, just because now I'm going back in the office 3 days a week. So I probably should. But before, I set this up recently. So
Yep.
But yeah,
you're always close that. By. Yeah, you wouldn't have needed
it. Yeah, I was always by a charger.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you use for their wall outlet? Is it the actual outlet, or do you use a third party like a Wemo or whatever else?
It's a Z-Wave outlet.
Yeah. Okay.
Like the actual outlet is hardwired into Z-Wave, or have you got like a smart plug on the other side of it?
Oh, it's actually in the outlet. Yeah, I replaced cool. The entire outlet.
Yeah, that's the dream.
I've always wondered, can you control those individually, or is it all on and all off?
Just one of the outlets you can change on and off. The other one's always on.
Okay. Got it.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah. It's another one of those things where I looked at and then left it at, looked at.
Yeah. I do that too.
Yeah. It happens a lot. But no, that's cool. What else are you doing around the house with, in terms of like what other hardware you have and things like that?
I am running a bunch of like Sonoff type stuff. Like for one thing I run is a power monitoring device for my washing machine. And I use that power fluctuation to determine when clothes are done washing. Mm. I used to have this bad habit of leaving them in a washer after they were done, and then get that kind of musty smell.
Yep.
And run through the wash again. Yeah, we've all been there, dude.
I was there today, so don't worry. Yep.
Yeah. And Phil has his exact automation, by the way.
Yeah, so. I have the automation set up. Yep.
So I use that, and it helps me to kind of make sure I move it to the dryer. I don't have anything for the dryer to tell when it's done. I haven't quite figured that one out yet, but just because of the amperage that it uses.
I've heard the vibration sensors are good for that. Yeah. So, you know, once it detects vibration, it knows, okay, the dryer's on. And then once it stops detecting vibration for, you know, X amount of time, just flick the switch off and say, okay, dryer's done.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, actually.
Mm. Yeah.
There you go. Something you need to add to the shopping list.
Yeah. And then I also use one to control the main power that goes to my holiday lights, which I also run the strips and stuff along the outside of the house.
Yep.
Nice. I did that 2 years ago. So in the seasons that aren't really a holiday, or sorry, in the months that aren't really a holiday of any kind, I turn the main power off to that using a Sonoff device.
Yep.
But whenever, you know, Halloween or Christmas comes around, I usually leave that turned on and I just controlled the, it was using an ESP8266, and I recently actually just accidentally just wiped all the code off of it.
Lovely.
I was trying to, I was trying to fix something on it, and it just, so I'm in the process of rebuilding that, but I'm going to use WLED this time. I was using custom code this time. Also so ripped my Rob from the hookup.
Nice. So is this like a addressable LED strip around like the roof of your house? Or
yeah, pretty much under the gutters and stuff like that. Yep.
That's so cool. And so you're just obviously using it for Halloween. How do you go about like deciding what colors or anything? Like, do you have like a program that you run and then go, okay, cool, I'm going to have this orange, this red, this go back to orange here? Like, how do you come up with the design for that?
So I wrote a template inside of Home Assistant to basically determine which months which dates are what holidays and whatnot.
Yep.
And then I send that over a custom MQTT endpoint I set up. And then Node-RED does all the logic for, okay, is it Halloween or is it Christmas time? Right. And then it sends all the MQTT commands to change the colors to what they should be for the season.
Nice. Okay. So I'm just trying to picture your house, you know, if I'm standing back on the street, if I'm looking at the street and it's Christmas time, would there be like red and green, like chasing around your house moving, or would it be static? Like would the colors be in the one spot or were they moving around the house?
Yeah. I do like a chase effect for, you know, red and green.
For that effect, is that built in to like WLED or does Node-RED have to tell, you know, every 5 seconds, update this pixel to this color?
It's built into WLED, but I haven't got that set up yet. But on the code that I had before, it was using Fast LED, and they have some presets built into them.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So I could just imagine like my MQTTs are getting smashed with. All right. Now go to this color. Now go to this shade of red. Right.
It would make a lot more sense if the logic was in the ESP and MQTT said, "Hey, go switch to program X." Right.
Yep.
Like program Halloween or whatever. Right. Like,
are you a sports fan, Joshua? Have you got like your favorite team? Like, if you win a sports match, that your house changes to the team color.
No, I don't have that set up. So I'm a Carolina Panthers fan. And most of the games that we play are in the middle of the day here. So it wouldn't make much of a difference.
That's fair.
Maybe I should just get an air horn or something and just have some kind of motor.
Oh, the neighbors will love that. But there is a siren integration now. You can probably add it to, you know, as a siren integration to Home Assistant. There you go. Done.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. That's right.
Every touchdown, just run the siren for about 3 seconds.
Yeah. Just you have to make sure your siren is hidden though, just so that people don't realize that it's you that's doing this.
And absolutely.
Yeah.
This is how to be a terrible neighbor 101.
Put the siren on someone else's house and then remotely trigger it from your house.
That's right. Just dig some wires underground.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
We'll never find it.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to the Garbage Neighbors podcast.
But, so what are you using to control Home Assistant around the house? Have you got tablets set up around the house or do you prefer like a favorite voice assistant or just pull out your app?
So for most of the time, I'll just use the Amazon devices. But every now and then, you know, sometimes you just don't feel like talking to a dumb machine sometimes. So I'll just pull out my phone and do it that way. I can't tell you how many times that the A-word's just like, yeah, I can't help with that.
Well, the worst is, the bathroom lights aren't responding at the moment, and yet she's just turned them on or off, like doing what, like, are you serious?
Yeah, all the time. Yeah. It's my personal favorite is recently, like, again, I have a TV time scene set up, so you know, when I'm like, hey, turn on TV time, it you know, she comes back with, there are multiple devices named TV time. So I'm like, fine. Okay. So I went through and I just found one. So I disabled it. Yep. And I was like, turn on TV time. And she's like, the device exists, but it's disabled. And I was like, oh my God. Like, just
the worst is, like if I've got, like living room, like as, you know, just a group, right. But then, like my air conditioner that comes through from Sensibo is just called like the living room because it's, you know, in the living room. And so randomly, like, it will relink with, you know, the Amazon Echo. And then I'll go, all right, what's the temperature in the living room? You know, oh, it's this. Okay, cool. Turn off the living room lights. You go, oh, sorry, that device doesn't support that. I'm like, of course. It's, yeah. So there you go. Or the favorite is turn on, she, for whatever reason, she'll think we said turn on the living room, which turns on, you know, every single light, the air conditioner, every switch that's in that group.
Yeah.
Which then, of course, means all the scenes get turned on. So, yeah. So I agree, opening up the app is sometimes preferable to yelling at a dumb voice assistant.
The not-so-smart home,
The thing I'm working on now is, so I recently got my 3D printers back up and running, so I'm trying to get Octoprint to start sending appropriate data to my setup so I can do automations based off of that.
Yep. Get alerts when, you know, your printing's done or...
Yep.
Yeah. I was going to ask what kind of outside of notifications, what kind of automations could you possibly do? I haven't really looked at. I don't have a 3D printer, so I haven't really looked at that.
I do have it set up right now for one of my printers, so that when it finishes, it'll send an alert to all the Amazon devices, and they'll announce to me that it's done.
Okay,
which is nice. And then I'd like to. I want to figure out a way to get a snapshot of what's printing every 30 minutes or so, if it's currently printing.
Like from a camera snapshot?
Yeah. Yep. So that way, you know, if you start getting a stringing mess, you can just stop it right there. You can stop wasting filament. So
Interesting. That would
be, I think that'd be cool, actually. Like, and then I guess if you do it intervals enough, you could do like a time lapse and put it in like a GIF. And then you could have, you know, like seeing it slowly getting built, like its progress.
Yeah,
that would be.
I think Octoprint has that built in, if I'm not mistaken.
It does.
Yeah,
it does. I just don't know if you can like export a photo immediately from that. That would be cool if you could. I haven't really looked at it, to be honest.
Yeah, because a friend of mine that has a 3D printer, he does exactly that. So it's pretty cool because every time basically you can make it so that when the I don't know what it's called, the pen end thing, where the plastic comes out of, the nozzle, that's the word. Wow, I'm having a definitely smart morning this morning. So when the nozzle moves off the camera, out of the camera view, it'll take a snapshot and basically build it up that way, so it looks like it's just kind of coming up. So I know that's how he makes a lot of his 3D print videos, which are actually pretty cool. So, but
I think it's after every layer, it'll move it off to the side and take a picture.
Yeah.
So, which is cool. Yeah.
How often do you need, because I also don't own a 3D printer, how often do you need to replace the cartridges, the filament or ink, whatever it's called in a 3D printer? Like, do you go through a lot, do you find? Or
I'm sure some people do. I rarely print really large things on my printer, so I don't really have that problem as much. I do go through filament at a decent speed, but as in terms of like running out mid print, I don't have that problem very much. However, I've got a print going right now that's supposed to take a day and 1 hour or something like that, so we'll see.
Wow.
What happens if you run out halfway through? Do you have to start again?
So my printers have a filament detection sensor. So once it detects that it's run out, it'll stop the print and then wait for you to come add or insert more filament.
Yep.
Right. And it picks up kind of where it left off?
Correct. Yeah.
That's cool.
And are you like designing things to be printed, or are you just like finding things on Thingiverse that you like to print?
Yeah, I most of the time find things that I like to print. I do want to learn how to 3D model so I can build my own.
That's cool. Yeah, I wouldn't have idea how to start. Like, the one time I wanted to 3D print something was for like a blind here. And I was like, I just need this to be better. Like, I just need, I know what I wanted, but I couldn't think of how I would design it in a way that it would be perfect when it came out printed, right? Like, I just, And then I'm like, well, that's why I don't buy a 3D printer, because I would waste so much ink or filament trying to get this thing printed perfectly. 3D printed. Yeah, exactly. And then it would come out wrong. And I'd have to throw it in the bin anyway.
I don't know how you have it, Phil, but I know at least in Ontario, there's a lot of libraries now that have 3D printers and stuff, and you can basically
Really?
Pay for how much filament you use, and you bring in the whatever STL file or whatever it's called. Yep. And basically give it to them. And some of them are kind of like small. Like, I think when I was looking up, somebody told me about Toronto Library, like the actual city of Toronto, their libraries there. I think they allow you to 3D print for like 30 minutes at a time or something like that, which is like, mm-hmm. okay, you can 3D print something tiny, but it's still something, right? Like, but yeah, there's a lot of times where you can get like free printing services essentially outside of the filament that you use for, which I think is a fair trade-off, right? Like, I mean, it's a consumable, it costs money, fine, I'll pay for the filament. So
I think there's like, I saw even some services, you know, you can go around and you send them the file, they'll print it for you and ship it to you, which is, so that seems reasonable. But then you know, like, you're paying $20 for this little plastic thing that, you know, probably has 20 cents worth of filament in it. So
Yeah, and most of the time I find that people are also charging you based on energy cost, wear and tear on the printer. So, like, the nozzle, you know, time to finish. If there's a finishing process, you're paying for that too. So,
Oh, true. Yeah, that makes sense.
I had a buddy who would print stuff for Etsy and whatnot, and he had to factor all that stuff in.
Yeah. Does he do custom prints?
Yeah, he did. He did custom prints and stuff.
That's cool. Yeah.
All right, well, I'm not going to get rich if I buy a 3D printer.
That's right.
I do feel like I'm like not living or I'm not giving my 3D printers the full potential if I don't learn some kind of CAD. But where do you find the time?
That's it.
That's exactly it. I think again, with me too, I've learned to start reeling in my scope of, I'm like, I want to do this, because Phil usually ends up making fun of me for stuff I haven't done. So, but even like the LED lights you were saying outside your house and stuff, I think I was talking to Phil about that like 5 years ago, being like,
I think it was when Bra came out with his like staircase that he had done, and you're like, dude, this is so cool, I'm totally doing this.
Right? You know what, it was between Bra Automation and Carlo, because Carlo said he had done it too, and we were talking, and I was like, oh, that is actually really cool. I still think it's really cool, and I still would love to do it. I definitely have parked that one in lieu of,
but you've got a good opportunity. I remember you put it on your pergola, like out in the backyard, that you just got put in.
We put just string lights that we got from Costco. It seems to be the de facto string lights that everybody uses. they're fantastic, honestly. And I actually stuck them on the, if you remember a while ago, we got a beta unit from Lutron, with their outdoor lights and stuff. It works amazing. And I still use it, and it integrates with the rest of my, Lutron stack, but like it talks back to my Lutron hub, which then talks back to Home Assistant. And I have that hooked into whatever automations, even my Goodnight automations and stuff, in case we forget to turn it off.
Make sure it's all switched off. Yep.
Yeah. Have it on my Echoes. So they turn on the pergola lights and that kind of thing. Right. So it's nice. That's why for me, like, I wouldn't put it there, just because I've got the string lighty kind of effect. And at first I was like, ooh, I need to make smart string lights. And then this came down my way and I'm like, sold.
Yep. So, makes it easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's your, you know, we're getting towards the end of the year now, Joshua. So what's your goals for your home automation? How do you want to step it up in 2022?
Oh, wow. That's,
that's a tough question.
That's an interview question.
That is. Yeah. Where do you see yourself in 2023 and 2024? Yeah.
I want to work on more lighting type stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got all these like basic light bulbs and stuff. I would like to be able to do color sometimes, like when I have friends over or whatnot. I'd like to do that. And I also kind of want to get more into fine tuning, like some automations, like, you know, like a bedtime routine or something, like, I do have one of those, but it's very basic. I just turn off all the lights and then turn on a master bedroom, light just to get ready for bed.
Yeah.
But I'd like to make it smarter somehow in terms of, I don't know, maybe the A word giving me information about tomorrow, and I don't know, just kind of like a debrief for the day.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Or even when you get up from, like, or do you mean when you go to bed or get out of bed? Because even when you get
both,
you
really.
Say, yeah. That might be kind of cool. And if you have it integrated with like your work calendar or something, like, hey, Joshua, by the way, today you've got these meetings and you have to go into work. So wear a jacket. Yeah. Like, whatever, right? Like, it's.
The traffic between your bedroom and the living room is zil.
Yeah.
That's right.
You were up late. Expect heavier traffic at downstairs.
That's right.
It's interesting. So I used to have a good night. Well, I still do have it there. I just never use it, which is, you know, I would tell the little lady in the Amazon Echo, you know, good night. And it would close, you know, make sure everything's switched off and all that. But I found that, you know, as we've sort of progressed, like, we don't need to say that anymore, I guess. Maybe the automations are just there enough that they know, you know, once the TV in the living room has been turned off, you know, there's been no motion out in the kitchen or the living room for a while, like, the house knows to go into night mode. So yeah, I think it, and this is where I've always struggled with scenes, right? Like, it's cool to have a predefined scene, but mm-hmm. you know, like, once you get to the level where the automations are there predicting what you're doing, you know, just, I guess, saying goodnight to her doesn't mean anything to me anymore, right? Like, she can just turn off all the lights, but they'll turn off anyway.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Mine's a little more primitive than that, right? It's because typically my fiance, she'd go to bed before I do, right? So she'll mm-hmm. get to bed, whatever, and I'll sit there and she'll never say, hey, turn off this light, turn off that light, turn off that light. Instead, she'll just say goodnight. So I actually had to refine my goodnight automation to basically leave the living room lamp on if my TV is on, right? Like, so just stuff like that. I had to make it a little more, and then you know, I'll turn off the TV and then I'll say goodnight, and then it'll run that check again. But because the TV's off, it'll.
But then, how do you say goodnight and get her to check the TV's off? Like, the TV will always be another controller.
Yeah, it's that's always manual by design, right? Because otherwise, because it didn't used to be, and then she'd turn off the TV when I was sleeping or when I was watching TVs, and
yeah, you'd be in the middle of like Game of Thrones episode, and like, yeah, wow, this episode is really dark, and no, your TV's just been turned off.
Boom. Yeah, exactly. but yeah. No, that's wicked.
All right, Tosha. Well, yeah, thank you so much for jumping on the call with us. We really love hearing what everyone's doing with Home Assistant. I'm very jealous of your blinds. I do think that running the power through an Ethernet cable and getting them up that way is probably a good thing. Good to see that someone's using the hookup blinds as well. I know it's been very popular. Where can people find you? I know you're on Twitch. You've got a website. You do some blogging on. Where can people find you if they want to reach out?
Yeah, so you can. My personal website is .netevolved.com. So you can find my stuff there
most of the time. I will leave all the links in the show notes, of course, so check them out there if you need to.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Thanks. Cheers.
Thanks for coming on. Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.